We're here to entertain you. We'll sing your songs for good times, the best times. You can't go wrong. We'll two-step, a new step. It won't be long. When the Dixielands are playing, soon you'll be swaying. So come on, sing along.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of Before My Time. I am your host, Gelsey Laurie. Why did I operatically welcome you to this week? Well, because I get to be joined by Carolina Alvarez, who is a filmmaker and co-host of the podcast Femme Regard, to talk about the opera Carmen. Enjoy!
Hailing from the Garretscape, welcome one and all to Masters of the Media. In a land of pop culture podcasts, I, filmmaker Garrett Briones, and my quote-unquote co-host Jack Watson look at the why of the stories we love and figure out why they connect with us. The show is all about loving the media you love and appreciating the underappreciated. It's a celebration of storytelling and also two pals making each other laugh at random impressions and the silliest things you can imagine. You can find Masters in the Media on all your favorite podcatchers and right here on the Geekscape Network. We hope to see you all on the Garretscape.
Okay, Carolina, thank you so much for joining us today.
It's actually Carolina, if you can roll your R's.
Oh, I'm so sorry. Okay. Carolina. What's the ethnicity or background of that?
Yeah, so I'm first generation here in America. My mom is from Poland and my dad is from Colombia.
Awesome.
Which influences a lot of my love and appreciation for opera, I guess. And why I was not a normal child growing up. Yeah.
Join the party. Not normal at all here.
No, no one's normal, but like, you know.
This is true. Especially if any entertainment, arts, you know, if you have any finger in that, then we're just oddballs. But yay. All right. So this is awesome. The opera Carmen is what we're going to be talking about.
Mm-hmm.
Where to even begin? Like, tell me why you picked this.
Yeah. So I think I've read like, what Matt had like texted me really quick, like what I needed to center a topic on. And I think the first, what I got out of it was like, what were some things growing up that you were obsessed with? So I was like, okay, birds. I was the weird, like, I thought I was going to be an ornithologist or however you pronounce it, because I had a pet bird growing up. And like, I loved reading eyewitness books, and that's a whole nother tangent. So I was like, okay, I don't really want to talk about that on the podcast, because that was a very weird thing that I shouldn't tell people like about myself. But there was that. And then I was thinking about, you know, music. I grew up singing and dancing. I studied musical theater in college. So I was thinking about like my musical influences. And then when he said, oh, like, you know, from decades ago, I was like, oh, well, that's literally what I was obsessed with growing up, was opera, jazz. I was telling you, my parents are not from this country. So like their cultural like music was very much a heavy influence on my childhood and what I grew up listening to. Like, I learned who Britney Spears and NSYNC was like on the playground. Like, that's where I like understood pop culture. So like everything else was just totally different, I think, than what someone normally like grew up listening to.
That's awesome though. I think it's very enriching to have, because everyone can get Britney Spears and NSYNC.
Yeah, and they're legends in themselves. And but I think it was really cool actually thinking about why Carmen, the opera, like you said, why more so to me. And I realized like, wow, like she was the first kind of strong female character that I was exposed to as a young girl. Like, she was the first femme fatale, but like And looking more into this, like just overall in opera, she's like the strongest female character that you'll find in the way she is in her nature, but just overall, like, yeah, like what she wants is what she gets. And that was always really cool to me.
That's awesome. Yeah. I always reflect on kind of like who the female characters in my life were. And it is like when you're like, wow, I watched this when I was 6 or 7 and these were the women I was looking up to. And you kind of realize, wow, that shapes me so much. And even with Disney, I was talking to a friend how, you know, there's all the Disney princesses and we're kind of that generation where we still got the tail end of the, ooh, I'm asleep and I need a prince to come kiss me. But we started getting the, at least for me, it's like Mulan was my, you know, she was huge for me, huge. And then Megara from Hercules was one of my favorites. And she was that strong, like, I'm fine, I can take care of myself. And I was like, oh, that's interesting, from a cartoon world. But yeah, so can you give us like, and you don't have to be pressured to make it perfect, like a sentence or two synopsis of what Carmen is about?
Yeah, no worries. I did a whole Google Doc because that's just the producer.
Amazing. I normally do like all handwritten. Yeah, I've got like pages of notes every time. I'm like, chicken scratch.
Yeah, no, that is me when I'm not. I was just like, oh my gosh, okay. I wanted to get it right. And it is a interesting story. So just briefly, it's set in the 1830s in Seville, Spain. And this is a French opera. So it's really interesting that it was actually based on a French novel that they then adapted. And I'm talking about Georges Bizet Carmen, which I think is the only version. But it's I guess ironic that this is the quintessential Spanish woman, but it is all in French and written by Frenchmen. So
kind of like the romanticized idea of it. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So it kind of starts, the first opening scene is set in town. She's known as the prostitute and she's seducing all these men, but just like playing with them, which is again, something I thought was always fun. Like she like really had power in her body and she didn't like, wasn't throwing in like a way to beg for money. Like she was like commanding that room, you know? Mm-hmm. So she's like flirting around. And then that is when, oh, I don't know if you could hear this, but everyone should be familiar maybe with this tune. Can you hear this? So are you familiar with that sound at all?
Oh yeah.
Oh yeah. So that's the opening scene. And then
I don't think I realized that was from Carmen. I know that is like, you know, like cannons going off and like, dun, 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 you know, it's like the big kind of like shabam and whoops.
Exactly. Yeah. And so many like cartoons and other like films.
Yeah.
Like,
that's, I know all this from Looney Tunes. I mean, Bugs Bunny is
Looney Tunes. Exactly. Another childhood love of mine. So that's like how that starts. And then she goes into, the habanera, which is this, if everyone knows. So she's singing this sexy dance and then she gets in a knife fight with a woman. Yeah. Like again, she's just very like strong and kind of fiery. Love that. And so she gets in a knife fight with this woman. And then this officer, his name is Jose, he tries to break them apart. Well, he's ordered to arrest her for this knife fight. And he doesn't want to because she was flirting with him, but he was trying not to care. Like she's feeding him a flower. And he's like, oh, no, no, no. Like he's a spoken for man. But he definitely, you know, he kind of tucks that flower away. And he feels like he can't arrest her, which ends up putting him in jail because he breaks his breach of duty. So dun, 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 a month later, like he's in jail, Carmen's free. And while he's in jail, like Carmen's bored. And so this bullfighter Escamillo arrives and he's flirting with Carmen. And she's kind of like, well, like, you know, her heart is for Mr. Don Jose, but she like can't help but enjoy this attention, but she tries to ignore him. And then Jose is released from jail and she wants him to run away with her now that he's out of jail, but he feels that he needs to go back to his line of duty and join the army because they had this fight going on that night. And she's like, no, well, you must not love me enough. And then he reveals that he saved that flower when she first tossed that out to him. So he's like, she's like, oh, okay, so you do care, but still, like, run away with me. And so in that moment when they're chatting, a lieutenant returns to arrest Carmen because she never got caught. And then Jose decides to, like, attack everyone on her behalf. And so then he's forced to run away with her. So this man, right, you know, okay. does it. He does it. He breaks away, runs away. They're in the mountains. And, well, poor Jose.
Carmen. I know. I was like, this opera's never end well. I was like, when does someone die? Or, like.
Yeah, exactly. Well, she gets bored of him up in the mountains. She's just like, you know, the habanera stands for, when she sings in the beginning, is love is a rebellious bird that none can tame. This bird theme, it's like, you know, stuck with me.
Yeah.
Who knew? And so she's just like, that's just kind of the theme. Like, love maybe can't be tamed and neither can she. And you shouldn't try to also tame a woman either. Like, you know, there's like all this stuff that we can like look into these feminist lines that we have here. Mm-hmm. But yeah, she tells him to go home to his mother and, you know, it's not working. And he does. And then
that's what I tell boys when I'm done with them. Go home to your mother.
Go.
I'm gonna start.
Imagine.
That was lovely, but go home to your mother now.
Go home to your mother. I'm bored. Thanks for dinner. Imagine. And then Escamillo arrives and invites everyone to his next bullfight before he leaves. So they must have like kind of gone back to town, and she noticed that. And then pretty much this is towards the end. She gets, you know, Escamillo has had his eye set on her and ends up escorting her to the fight with him, which then Jose sees outside the arena, and he like kind of sneaks up on her and like begs Carmen to come back and come away with him. But she refuses, saying that she is born free and will die free. And in a jealous rage, Jose stabs her to death while the crowd inside the arena cheers Escamillo to victory. And then she ends up dying in the arms of Escamillo. But the takeaway is she dies free. And those were her decisions. And shouldn't kill.
Ladies and gentlemen, the moral of this story is don't throw roses out to strangers.
Just don't do that. You don't.
Don't throw roses out.
Don't touch someone with a good time.
You're going to get stabbed. Yeah, well, I was waiting for the big death ending. I was like, who's getting stabbed? She does. Okay. Yeah.
She ends up dying this epic death, but it is epic. And
they're always like singing while they die, where it's this, that's like the highest note they reach is their. I saw La Boheme it's the only opera I've ever seen is La Boheme.
Oh.
And I was in Vienna at the time and we were there and we're like, we have to go see the opera in Vienna.
Wow.
Thank goodness I had seen and knew Rent so well, because for those of you who don't know, the musical Rent is based on the opera La Boheme. So I was kind of trying to figure out, I'm like, okay, I think that's Roger, that's Mimi. Cause like we didn't get subtitles at all. So I really honestly could say I didn't know what was going on except a little bit. But her death scene was like, gosh, 10 minutes. And she kept like, ooh, and then it was ooh, like, she would like keep like not dying. And I'm like, oh my God, bitch, die. Like I had one of those, like my only experience at the operas, you know, when you're not supposed to laugh, it's like those quiet mm-hmm. moments in church kind of things when uh-huh. you can't laugh. And that's when you have the biggest laughing fit.
You can't help it.
It happened to me at the opera, and I was literally shoving my winter coat in my mouth because it was the only thing that would stop me from going, bah! Like, and it wasn't the death thing. It was something else. I forget. It just, anyways, that's my opera experience. But yeah, Carmen, I need to see this at least live would be amazing, but because the music, I didn't realize how much I knew of it.
Yeah. Like, so a note that I made here, one of the films that I did grow up watching is Carmen 1984, which is probably one of the best camera versions because it was also the first version to use text dialogue in between the musical numbers mm-hmm. rather than just it all be singing the whole time.
Yeah.
So it was kind of like, yeah, more of a film, and you can like definitely understand the story and follow along with subtitles. So
yeah,
that one that I really like loved because also the singer and the voice, she's just incredible. So I do recommend that film.
Okay, I will check that out then, for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
I need to dive more into opera. Like, that's not my Phantom of the Opera was for a long time, like, really my only.
Oh my God, same.
Exposure to it, I think a lot of us, but it's a nice, because it's like that rock opera-y.
Yeah, I mean, it's not for everyone, and I get why. Yeah. Like, it's first of all, you have to, like, be able to withstand that kind of sound. Like, it is, like, a
lot. It's a lot.
Lot.
I'm not going to lie. I love it, but I don't think I could, like, put on a whole album. I'd be like, okay.
Yeah, I definitely just have moments because, again, I grew up with it. And I think when you grow up with something and have this like love, unique love and appreciation for it, you understand. And I understand it better for that reason. Like,
absolutely. That's how classical music is that for me, which can lead into opera. Yeah. But I grew up with ballet, like intense. I was a bunhead. And so classical music for me is very comforting, inspiring. It's because I grew up with it and I can understand the ballets. I get that there for sure.
Same thing. Like I think classical, just across the board, I grew up with ballet. I played classical piano for 12 years. Mm-hmm. I like all of that. So, and they all kind of sync together. And again, I feel like with Carmen, I just her unique, like strong female energy was just like, whoa, that's kind of baller in the opera world.
So when did the first opera get performed of Carmen? Do you know? Or
got
about
performed
when it came out?
It premiered in Paris in 1875. And fun fact, it did not premiere well.
That was going to be my next question, because this is a very racy kind of subject as well. And it's very like, whoa. And for that time too.
It was... one critic in, I have a note here, in Paris was shocked by the drastic realism of action. So I guess also like all that fighting and stabbing and, you know, the bull fighting and all of that, I think was probably like a shocker. And yeah, the content of who she was. So I think its first performance when it opened in England, which I don't have the date, in June 1878. So just a couple years later, it looks like, after when it premiered in England, it started to, that's when it grew like this enormous popularity. But I think that's cool. It's like cult films, you know, like,
I was thinking the same thing. Yeah. They don't do well at first. And then it years later kind of has this huge following and then they become a classic.
Exactly. And I was like, wait, that's really cool. Like that happens, I guess, of course it happens across like the board in art, you know, or even
across time too. It's not just like something now and it's even then. And I think sometimes that shows not like, oh, it's so artsy and deep, people aren't ready for it, but it kind of is. It's like, I think things that do that, it's like, it's going to take some people a while to get to like it and grow and be like, oh my God, this is amazing, because most people do kind of like a more shallow, like, give the people what they want. This is that, whether it be just like a good action film and the hero wins the end, or give us the rom-com or the get together. Everyone immediately is like, oh, it was a great movie. But the ones that are a little more kind of bizarre, like even a Tarantino film, I think now everyone knows going into a Tarantino film what they're getting into. They're like, I know what to expect. But in the beginning, or, you know, it's those kind of like, what the hell did I just watch?
Right.
It takes a while, but then you're like, that was the greatest thing I've ever seen. But I think that's true art when it takes longer to reflect and decide if you like it.
Yeah, because I was listening to another podcast this morning on a film, and they were talking on the subject of documentaries and how, like, I guess a lot of them, I wouldn't say a lot of them, but what I took away from that conversation was the ones that don't have their objective like so spoon fed to you, but allow you or as the viewer to decide like what your take or view on a certain like subject matter or what, you know, what they're showing you. They don't like purposely with the music and with everything make you feel exactly what you need to feel, or, you know, or like you said, something that's so comfortable and you're like, okay, like this is easy. I think that makes kind of the better work that's done can make you decide how you want to feel about it. And that's why I think a lot of art house films, like the more experimental, they really like, are like, you're either going to hate it or love it, but we're not going to try and like fit a certain mold or an agenda that we
yeah,
have.
This is what I'm bringing and this is what I want to tell. And it's, I'm fine if no one likes it. I'm going to stay true to what, yeah, that's, and it always, I want to say a few episodes ago, I can't remember. I think Matt and I were talking about like kind of the you decide endings, and I know Inception is always like my example. And we were talking about that, but I was like, like the ending of Inception where you're like, wait, is he dreaming or not? And it's still, I talk about it a lot because it drives me fucking nuts. Cause I'm like, I want to know what, but it's kind of up to your interpretation. And I used to even write, you know, like in fifth and sixth grades when your writing assignments weren't like thesis papers, they were like, write a story. All my stories, I was so into shock value. Like one was like this medieval story where like the lover dies and then this old creepy troll comes and the woman like stabs herself to death. And like, I was like writing this at like 10 years old, like dee dee dee. Like, and yeah. I left it open where it was like, did he kill her? Did he not? And my teacher had to talk to my parents. Actually, I wrote too many really, really dark stories. Like one of a child gets abducted. One girl's like has the worst eating disorder to get to, ends up in a hospital. And he's like, is she okay? And I was like, I'm fine. But so I've always been attracted to that kind of not on the beaten path, like off what you were saying, kind of you decided it has always intrigued me since I was young.
Yeah. And like attributing this opera to like even a Tarantino film, like that are very graphic and like gory for the most part, very lots of blood, but he does it too in his own like theatrical way that you could almost compare that to an opera. You know, the blood, it's not real looking, right? It's like that red, like blood, like it's just like gushing
like from the
out.
Adams Family when yes, when they do the performance at school and the blood's like spraying out. It's always what I think of. Yeah.
There's like that comedic like take on that, which I can almost like compare it like the kind of opera drama comedy, because it's still like very theatrical, so I can only imagine what they were doing on stage. Like God, I wish I could like see it, because it'd be really curious. I'd be really curious to see like how they did special effects.
Yeah, it would be. And so this opera's still being performed today.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, yeah, I missed it when I was studying in New York. They were doing it at the Met Opera, and they still do it today. I mean, if they do it at the LA Opera, I'll for sure go. I saw the La Traviata there, and that one was hilarious. So I still have a love and appreciation. You just gotta like, I feel like get lucky and go to the one that, you know, is like has comedy or something. Cause that one was just funny. Like everyone was over the top and just like making jokes, and it's a good time.
I wonder, cause it seems like the performances they do now of operas are pretty authentic to what they would have performed when it opened. It doesn't seem like they kind of add in these high technological things. It seems like it's very true to the art of being this over the top theatrical, like, well, we're going to be like Carmen. We're going to be free.
Yeah. We're going to be wild and free. And that's like, I think this is the Carmen theme takeaway. What we like, you know, I'm not, I told you, I was like, I'm sorry, I'm not like super, super like nerdy about operas, but I just feel like her overall theme is something I found that I like to write about in my films. Like I love a femme fatale character. Oh, and that's like archetype is just like what I try to use or also try to make different and how it relates to me and like what I'm going through. Cause there's like, yeah, I really love trying to find like a modern archetype to these things that we like grew up watching and loving or like, okay, well, what does that look like today? Because now our perspectives have changed and like, we're trying to change more of them, you know, and it's a really fun place to work in. So she's definitely, it was really cool to be introspective, like in preparing for this podcast to think about, okay, like, wow, I didn't never put that together until like now. I'm like, yeah, no wonder. Like she's always been this thing. And before the pandemic, I was working actually on a modern noir and I wanted to have the opening femme fatale character sing the habanera, which TBD that will happen.
Cool. Okay.
But I think like inspired, not I probably not that song, but just like I'm really excited because I want that film to feature a femme fatale and a homme fatale, so both a male and female like fatale characters, to have them both like be threatening each other in the film. So that's something I'm excited to play with. And again, I think it comes from, I know it comes from this opera because that's just what inspired me to write that.
Mm-hmm. Oh, that's so awesome. I love, yeah, it is fun to reflect on things that you love. And that's why I love this podcast so much too, is, you know, it's constantly, I'm going into things that I know I love. And then I go, oh, that's like how you make a Gelsey cocktail. Like, and it's just, I didn't realize these ingredients that I'm like, oh gosh, this molded me so strongly. And especially at a young age, if you find these things, that's when you're so influential. And it's like, oh, well,
No shit.
It's funny, actually, this is kind of a side story, but it has to do with Carmen. My sister played piano. We both played classical piano growing up, but I quit way before she did because I was like, I don't like this. I didn't like my teacher. But she would play Carmen, and that was kind of one of her go-to songs, the habanera. And there was one time we would watch Rosie O'Donnell every day, her talk show, the Rosie O'Donnell show. And she was doing, I think it might have been Breast Cancer Awareness Month. And so she went and got a mammogram, and she was making this big episode on like making awareness of mammograms. So she had a challenge. You could set, you know, she'd have things like send in this or send in that. So she was like, write a song about getting a mammogram and we'll feature someone or whatever. And so we wrote one. My sister would always play that. And so I would sing it, and I'm like, seven or eight max. And we wrote lyrics to it about getting a mammogram. And it was, if you are 40 and not a man, then go and get yourself a mammogram. Take your sister by the hand and go get yourself a mammogram. A mammogram. A mammogram. And I forget the rest of it. And I'm like 7 years old singing this song to Carmen. And so every time I hear this song, I can't not sing the lyrics about getting a mammogram.
That is,
we should have sent it in.
Most funny thing I've ever heard. I was not expecting that. That is.
Yeah, no, hilarious. I know. It's definitely like goes in a different. I was like,
we should go viral.
I know. I'm sad. I wonder if she remembers the rest of the lyrics, because I know we had like the whole song written, which is funny because now I have a YouTube channel and I'm very on and off it. But my last like 5 videos I did were all parody songs where I just rewrite lyrics to common songs. And I didn't realize that. I was like, oh, yeah, I guess we've been doing it since I was little.
Yeah, that's, how old were you? Probably
7.
Oh my god,
7 or 8.
Yeah, that's hilarious. Did you even know what a mammogram was?
That's when I learned, because we would watch Rosie, and she was talking. I think Rosie sang, basically did the hokey pokey, but she's like, you put your left boob in, you put your left boob out. That was like her mammogram song. And so then my mom explained, I was like, well, what's that? And she's like, oh, and explained the whole process. I was like, oh, okay, cool.
So that is so funny.
A little song to Carmen.
I love
so
that.
So this opera, though, is written on the novel. Was the novel at all? I know sometimes they're inspired by true people. And so are these characters at all inspired by anyone that was real?
I like tried to figure that out. And like I did research, but all it said was that it was just based on this book. And it's based on Carmen herself.
Okay. I'm like, sure, there's a Carmen out there that.
Yeah, I know. Right?
And when it's so hard when things are, you know, it's like the opera is based on the novel, and then it's like you're going back in time, and it's like things aren't recorded as easily as they are now. We have everything, where it's that can be hard to find. But
yeah, exactly. The I started by another Frenchman. I can't. Do you speak French or studied it at all?
I used to. I like spoke decent French for 6 months in my life, and I lived in Montreal for 5 months. So when I was there, I was like, okay. And then I thought I was going to be in France for 2 years, and I wasn't. And then I lost everything.
Oh, it's hard when you're not living in the country. I asked.
It sucks. Because, yeah.
My pronunciation of these things, I can't pronounce this man's name. Prosper Mer. Who knows?
Perfect. So, that's it. You nailed it.
Nailed it.
Except.
A fun story. So yeah, I grew up playing piano and taking voice lessons. And for one of my like studies, I wanted to learn La Habanera. And I grew up taking Spanish classes, but not French. So I think it was my senior year of high school. I would like go bug the French teacher at the high school and like during my lunchtime and just like have her try to go through all the words with me and like phonetically best as I could, like write the pronunciations so I could learn how to sing it. And like thank God for her, because I was just like, I know she probably was like, why am I doing this right now? But I'm like, I had my music, like sheet music with me, and I'm like, please help me. No, she was so sweet. Shout out to the lovely French teacher at Morristown High School. I forget your name, but
you were bon, merci.
Beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. I know, like now it's just like, so it was hard. It was a hard one to learn. And also, fun fact, my voice teacher said I could never play the role because you have to be a true mezzo soprano. And at the time I was just like a high soprano singer, I guess. And I'm like, but I don't get I can hit all those notes, so I can't sing.
You'll never play Carmen like that. Yeah. Well, hey, I props to you for being a soprano. I'm sure you can tell by my speaking voice, I am far from it. I have the lowest cadence, alto, sulky, give me a cigarette kind of voice. So opera, like I hear it and I'm like, oh, and I think maybe a part of me that's like, whatever, is because there's just in no... Yeah. Universe am I ever hitting any of those notes? Like their lowest note is too high for me.
Well, well, that was interesting for musical theater transitioning into that world. I like had to like learn to really build up my low register, and like belting took me years to like figure that out. I don't know if their listeners are like, you know, they understand the whole voice thing, but like belting is like really strong, like how would you describe it?
Like, I know, I'm trying to think how I would describe belting. It's almost like when you hear like yelling in a song, like Kelly Clarkson belts. She's a belter.
Yeah. So yeah. Like you hear them.
Jennifer Hudson is a belter. Opera, you're up in your like higher register where you're like, whoa! And it's like, you can like feel it in your head. And then low is obviously how I speak, you guys. And then belting, you're like, like you know, you get it.
Yeah.
That's me as a Muppet explaining singing.
No, it's like right on track. I've performed it. I did end up learning the lyrics, and
that's amazing.
I love it. I mean, oh my gosh. It's one of those things that I feel like through the years, maybe I'm yelling more. Like my belt is now much more stronger. I'm like losing my high notes. I'm like, oh my God.
It's hard. It's a muscle. I haven't sang in years. I mean, I sing like in the shower and in my car, but I used to take lessons. And now that I don't train it and I'm not doing the like exercises every day, I'm like, well, that's gone. Like,
yeah, I know. It's crazy. Yeah. I feel like if I do have to sing, like I have to take lessons and like really work out that muscle again.
Oh yeah. I would have to put some work in. And I love singing, but the work for it is like, it's kind of back to the reality of day to day. It's not fun work to me. Like I would rather do burpees every day. And I did, I chose that route. And so I like physically trained and I'll like have been in the gym for 6 hours a day. And like, I was a circus artist for years. So that's kind of like, I put all my training into being an aerialist. And so I literally did the pull-ups. My hands were ripped bleeding and I'm like, let's climb a rope with them bleeding. And like, that was the work I loved. And I was willing to do that, which a lot of people hate. Like I love working out until the feeling of I'm going to throw up and pass out. I'm like, yeah, like it gets me high. I don't know. It's crazy.
That's amazing. And I think for your listeners who don't understand the physical training that goes into performance art, like opera and musical theater, it is very much like being at the gym. Like you have to train your body to withstand that amount of power that you're trying to push from like your diaphragm and like all the breathing that goes into. And then like, I mean, to the point where maybe you're passing out and trying not to.
Yeah, the breathing exercises are, because it's holding your breath. Like to be able to sustain a note as long as they do, that's breath retention and it's even if, you know, if you guys can think about like talking and how much you have to, if you talk too fast, you have to keep taking a breath. It's being able to have a run on sentence with a sustained breath without it sounding like you're getting to the point of, I'm not going to lose it. It's incredible. Like, listening to singers that can just do that. I'm like, they
do
are
that. Ooh, it gives me goosebumps. Like I will still have like a visceral physical reaction to someone performing. Like even in film, like Coda that won the Oscars. I don't know if you saw it.
I need to see that still. I didn't. Oh my gosh, I need to see it.
Amazing. A young girl growing up with entire deaf family. And like, she wants to be a singer. And anyway, she like, it's no Carmen. I wouldn't say she's giving like this grand, but her voice is beautiful, beautiful, beautiful. And still like just the work and dedication to putting on a performance, because she then trains, and it's a discipline. And so like by the end when she's performing, and again, her voice is gorgeous, is like, I'm crying. I'm like sobbing.
Yeah. Well, it's because if you go on that journey with her, it's like any movie that's like the journey to the performance, the competition, the fight, whatever it may be, when you feel like you were there with them from the beginning and through the struggles and the training, then it's like, you kind of feel that mom and dad, like, I'm so proud of you. Like, I know everything that you put in, like, and it is, it's, there's,
I mean,
you know, we're so used. Oh yeah.
I'll cry at like the carolers at the mall at like Christmas time. Like, my boyfriend's looking over. He's like, why are you tearing? I'm like, just cause musical theater and they're just singing. It's so beautiful. And it's providing so joy to everyone around me. Yeah. Like, you know, like coming from that world, you know, it's not easy. And maybe that's not the ideal stage like they want to be at, but they're still like doing an amazing job and putting, you know, putting themselves up there.
Yeah, because like, they love performing. It's like they love the art so much that even if it's like, this doesn't pay well, I'm singing at a mall. Yeah. That's not the dream. But like the dream at the end of the day is to get money performing your art, and they are doing it. And I think there's a huge stigma these days of like, oh, like you do that job, or like, well, I'm, you know, everyone, it's like in New York, it's very Broadway or bust is the mentality, where it's kind of like anything below Broadway is like, that's cute. Or like, oh, you're climbing that ladder still. And it's the only thing. It's like, you've only made it if you've made it there on Broadway. And there is that kind of air. And then a little bit in TV and film, I feel like it's just kind of that like, well, what's the last set you were on? What's this? And it's this kind of nose up like, And there's a lot of theme parks in California, for those of you don't know, and a lot of us perform at theme parks. I currently do. That was my first job ever. I'm at Disney now. And it's a great solid gig. And some people will kind of like, oh, like, I'm not auditioning for that show. They think they're above theme parks. And I'm like, but actually you're waiting tables right now, and I'm paying my bills by doing what I love. I'm performing. At the end of the day, I'm like, what's the difference if I'm getting fulfilled, getting to entertain people, I get to make people smile and they're happy. Okay. Yeah. This is a successful career. I'm performing. What? I don't understand. So I don't like that kind of stigma that people have of, cause everyone thinks they're better than everyone else. And it's social media, we all have to be better than everyone else. It's a competition. And I'm like, just kind of go back to the theme of day to day. I'm like, just be happy, man. Just enjoy what you're doing. I'm going to die one day. We're going to give a rose to a stranger one day, and then they are going to stab us. So enjoy your life.
Yes, do not give roses to strangers. We cannot stress this enough on this episode.
Don't please give roses to strangers. Like, you're going to get stabbed. Carmen taught us. Carmen taught us well. Like, live my life by her now. Do you have any, I just thought of this, but performances in movies, like of operas performed in any films? Like, I'll tell you my example that I thought of. I love the opera number performance in Fifth Element. Blue Alien. Have you seen this?
No.
Oh my God. It's so good. It's one of my favorite movies. 1997, Matt said. It came out in 97. And there's this kind of blue alien opera singer who's the main, like, grand debut on this elegant ship that they're on. And it's an incredible. And you'll just YouTube that performance. It's not very long, but it's a kind of cool classic opera, but they bring in some cool like backbeats with it and then at the same time, Mila Jovovich is doing this like badass fight. And so they like are going back and forth between the opera singer and this like awesome fight scene, which I was a stunt woman. That's why I came back to California from circus, was to do stunts. So any good like action scene, I'm like, yes, like
shut up. No, and good to know.
So good. You have to watch it. You have to watch it. Yeah.
Oh my God. Yes. Cause, the feature that my co-producer Tess and I are working on is a sci-fi psychological thriller set in a sci-fi world, is how we like to properly say it, but psychological thriller sci-fi. Mm-hmm. In doing research on different sci-fi films that had existed, this one came up for me. That's why that the photo cover art looks familiar. But now I'm like, okay, I have to like watch this tonight.
Oh, you have to watch it. It's so, even like, it's like the 2 minutes I'm talking about, but that little opera number is probably, and she there's one point, like the note, I've never heard an opera singer. I mean, you might have because you're a little more exposed in that world, but like from the low to high, her register, I'm like, this is unreal. And literally she plays an alien. So I'm like, proven point, aliens. Singers that can sing that high, aliens.
Yeah. I can't remember of a specific opera moment. I don't know. I feel like that was something where I was drawn to. I want to create something that has that opera but modern. So that's why I'm dying now to watch this like kind of duo, because I think if it's done in the right way, it could be more popular or just like interesting. I want to see more of that. I think another film, because we were talking earlier about films that kind of have that open ending, and then I just keep wanting to know the answers and research, and has a musical, almost Carmen, like that the character kind of looks almost Carmen-esque to me, was the movie's Mulholland Drive. They're in a theater and it's kind of like almost, I think, a dream. It's not even real life. Like, we have to question it. But yeah, there's this woman singing a song in Spanish and it's very sad and like you're feeling very sad for her. But you don't understand, at least I'm pretty sure you can't understand what she's saying exactly. But the characters are reacting to her performance. And that always, like, again, I love how music evokes emotion, even in other languages like operas. I don't fully understand exactly what they're saying all the time, even with subtitles. You know, you're not catching everything, but you could really have a voice, especially like a strong classical voice, like kind of mesmerize and take you away. But yeah, Mulholland Drive in general.
Almost the same way with like, that's, yeah. I gotta watch that again. That's the same with classical music though. I feel like it doesn't have any words and I've cried listening to a song where it's just so overwhelmingly moving and or the orchestra. And so it's, you put a voice with that. And even if you don't understand what they're saying, it's the same. There's nothing being said in the classical song because no one's singing, but it's still can take you there where you're like, why am I crying? I'm not crying. You're crying. Like I do all the time. And I'm like, what is going on? And it's just these, like, it's overwhelming. And I feel like for me, I've never heard any music like classical, which I would put opera obviously within the classical realm, is there's no other genre that is that overwhelming and can just, you know, you can get emotional listening to any rock, pop, this, and that. They do have, they're awesome. They can rev you up, make you feel sad, and they're totally there. But classical, just, it's a whole different emotion evoking
music. And yeah, that's why it's the film is so powerful. Like, I mean,
That's why movie scores are, movie scores are so, oh my gosh. Like it's incredible. I mean, I love listening to movie scores. I'll listen to, you know, this, that. I run. Sometimes I have different like playlists that I run to, and it depends what my mood is. Some might be more rock, pop, this, that. And I have, it's literally musical score run.
No way.
And you put on Wonder Woman 1984. I run so fast. I like come home and like think I'm going to suffocate on my own lungs. I'm like, it's so like that music revs me up and I'm like, I am Wonder Woman.
I never thought to do that, to like run to like an action like film or something, you know what I mean?
It's so fun. Oh, because then you like put yourself, at least for me, and I'm sure like you're such a creative as well, like I put myself in the scene. So I'm not running. I'm like, oh, I'm running to that thing to beat their ass, to save the world. Like, and it works for me at least. Yeah. I love it.
A little takeaway.
Takeaway. Run to movie scores and don't give flowers to strangers. Is there any other final thoughts on Carmen that you're like, oh, I didn't say this? Or
I guess my final thought is, it's definitely one of those operas that resonate me for the strong Carmen character. And I know I already said that and reiterated that a million times. But just like to go on, piggyback on with classical music in general, like my other favorite composer is Chopin, and he just like all his music, just I grew up playing it, but just in general, like you really feel it. And like, I love that music is, you don't have to understand it. I think sometimes we want to just, and trust me, I like a spoon-fed Friends, The Office kind of show where like I get what's happening and like there's for that. But if there's any classical haters out there, I encourage you to like listen with open ears and like see what it makes you feel or where it takes you. For me, it like if I'm stuck creatively, for any creatives out there, it's like one of the best ways for me to work, because it's not like, especially without lyrics, like you can mm-hmm. just kind of be with yourself, but have something giving you a little sign while you're like sitting in yourself mm-hmm. being creative. So, I mean, put on Chopin, Debussy is another favorite of mine. Or maybe
Tchaikovsky, what?
You know, feeling like some going to war, put on some Carmen. There might be some battles. There might be a little, some sexy moments in there. Let's just see what happens.
Love it. I love it. Oh, well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
No, thank you so much for having me on. This was really fun. And just like, again, like gave me a moment to be introspective and, you know, don't have time for that.
Yeah.
So that was really,
I know we're all running around like chickens with our heads cut off. Yeah. So it is, it's nice to sit and just kind of reflect on yourself and also like where you come from.
Yeah.
In your choices and what you like, what you don't like, what you're motivated by. And yeah, it's a very interesting, you learn a lot when you reflect. So
exactly.
Yeah. Awesome.
Oh my God. Well, thank you so much for having me on. This was so much fun. Yes. And best of luck on your move. Stay in touch. Yeah, absolutely.
Thanks.
All right, babe.
So, Gelsey, when you guys were recording this episode, one of the things that kept jumping into my brain was how uncultured of a human being I am, because I'm pretty sure my introduction to this entire Broadway show was through an episode of Hey Arnold.
It's not a Broadway show, it's an opera.
Sorry, this is how uncultured I am. I don't even know the difference. Look at that. Huge points lost on me, who claim to be a musical theater fan. But yeah, I knew all these songs because of like Looney Tunes cartoons and Hey Arnold.
Oh, I was definitely introduced. I mean, the main songs I knew because of like Looney Tunes, and which is why I think like Bugs Bunny and Looney Tunes are so great, because they introduced so much classical music to the world. And even cartoons in general, you said Hey Arnold, like the Muppets do it a lot, because I it's how I think you can become a very cultured person by watching cartoons.
Yeah, I agree. Look,
why would we know an opera? Like, it's not fucking 1867 and we're like, oh, we're going to the opera. Like,
there's not new something operas being written.
I don't know. I'm not a big opera person, so
I'm not either.
Don't know
I'm
anything just about operas. Like,
I'm just literally wondering.
The opera is the most I've seen.
Like, because obviously, like, we constantly hear about new musicals as they come out. I haven't heard of a new opera.
I bet there are a hip opera, rock operas. Those are still musicals. I'm sure, like, at the Met, there's new ones. But again, I'm not. It's the same way that I'm not, like, into, like, is there a new painting out? Like, I don't know. Like, of course, every day there's being paintings. But, like,
I love the idea of someone just like showing up at an art museum and being like, hey, what are the new paintings today? I'm trying to figure out which ticket I want to buy.
Which, yeah, like, you know, it's like, of course, I'm sure. But I think it's also an art, and I could so be misspeaking right now, that it's tradition to do operas that already exist, to do the classics. It's like, okay, here's a great example. Ballet. There are many new ballets being choreographed and created. More shorts as well, but like everybody does Don Quixote, Sleeping Beauty, Firebird, Cinderella, Nutcracker, and Swan Lake. And we just like keep doing that shit over and over and over. Different choreography maybe sometimes, but, and so I think it's like that with opera, where you get Carmen, La Boheme, and those are the only operas I know of.
It's probably, so, and I imagine it's probably really difficult with both of those, because they're not on the same scale as like musical theater. You know what I mean? Like, there are people who are diehard. They're going to show up. They're going to go to every Broadway show. It's probably really hard to get the financing to justify.
Oh, I was
going
to say
new...
to get people to come back and see more than one show without falling asleep.
Oh, come on.
Just
you're
kidding.
Being...
I'm being a joke. I'm being funny. I'm joking.
But you know what I mean? Like, it's probably a really bad investment to a lot of people. Like,
yeah. I don't think there's as big as, you know, I think it's a very upper class, like, oh, we go to the opera. Like, it's not as accessible. And I do think it's a money game. And I think putting on an opera is expensive. Like, part of the game of an opera is the overly expansive, exquisite sets and costumes, and it's all about like kind of like a ridiculous parade of like, we're gonna bring this giant fake elephant on stage, kind of a, you know, like, it's beautiful, but that's part of the art, and that's expensive.
Yeah. And I also would say that another kind of strike against it, and this is going to sound like I'm downplaying people who do musicals, but like, you can do a small theater production of a musical. You can do a high school production of a musical, because like at the end of the day, not all musicals have a demand for the most like musically proficient singers in every single role, versus opera. It's like, you need to be like such a top tier. Like, you don't have the ability to be like, oh, it's this high school production of, like, I would avoid a high school production of Carmen like the plague, but I'll go see a bunch of high schoolers do Little Shop of Horrors because like, hey, it's probably going to be fun. You know, like,
totally. I totally agree. Yeah. You can't, you have to have the talent. You can't pull it off of, yeah, your local theater, or that's not really how opera works. It's, you can't expect to go to a local theater and be like, okay, so who can stand on one hand on someone else's head versus we can do this dance number and we can just dumb it down and still make it cute, but it doesn't have to be like, yeah, it's kind of like that. So,
well, if the audience listening thinks that we are completely wrong and just besmirching the beautiful, beautiful genre that is
opera, but I just don't want
to where can they vent to us?
Yeah, please vent about how uncultured we are on Facebook. Just search Before My Time. We'll pop up and be like, you guys are fucking idiots. Opera's great. That's not what we're saying. We said opera's great. We just don't know much about it. Or you can do this on Instagram at beforemytime_podcast. You can DM us and be like, you guys are fucking idiots. Opera's great. Which, again, we didn't say that. Like, I don't know why you keep saying that, because we're saying opera's great. We're just saying we just are not that cultured into it. So you can be like, oh my God, you guys are not fucking cultured. And we'd be like, yeah, we agree. Help us. Also, you can give us a 5-star review and be like, they are such a great podcast because they're so uncultured, but this will help get them out and get more people to culture them. I don't know, something like that. I'm pretty sure we're fucking cultured as fuck. So thanks so much for listening, guys. We appreciate it so much. I love each and every one of you cultured ladies and gentlemen. And please join us next week. Yay!
You're listening to the Geekscape Network.